Did I talk to Michael?
Micah.
About, I'm sorry, I didn't get the...
That was Jerry Jones's son, Steven, correcting him after what I'm guessing was maybe the fourth or fifth time he messed up the name.
Yeah.
And from there, I heard, I was listening in on some other cities this morning before we took to the air. And obviously, there's a big press conference yesterday. Jerry Jones traded Micah Parsons to the Green Bay Packers. So Jerry Jones met with the media yesterday evening in a press conference where he went for 11 consecutive minutes talking with a question got asked. He went for 11 minutes talking. So you need to know that. But he butchered Micah's name a few times. I heard some people in other markets talking about it. Like, well, he's kind of an old man, and he probably has, not fake teeth.
Yeah, he's 82 years old.
82 yeah. years old, and he's probably got some sort of dental work gone on that maybe has him mispronouncing things. Like, no. There were a couple times during the press conference where he said Michael and corrected himself. And said Micah after. No, he calls him Michael sometimes.
I think there's part of it where Jerry, again, he's just such a conundrum in so many ways. But he's 82 years old, so you want to give him the benefit of the doubt. And yet he's been saying stupid things for 30 years.
I don't want to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Right. This is why NFL teams, there's benefits to them being family owned and all of that. Yet at the same time, man, I just wish all of these teams had a board of directors where at some point you could say, hey, I know you're the owner, but you're not allowed to be the CEO anymore.
Right.
Like they do in the real world. Well, they're like, hey, I know you're the founder, but you're not allowed to be the CEO anymore. Sorry about it.
Ironically, they traded Micah Parsons to the one team that doesn't have an owner.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's crazy. So the odds on this now via FanDuel. The FanDuel is, and as I'm sure a lot of betting outlets have, readjusted their odds based on this trade. Does this sound right to you, Seth? That before this trade, the Packers had the ninth best odds to win the Super Bowl at 22-1. Mm. After this trade, they've been bumped up on FanDuel to fifth at 12-1. So they're basically saying that Micah Parsons is the difference between going to the divisional round and going to the conference title game in a way.
Yeah.
In a way, because you're ninth, it means you're among the final eight or nine teams. You're fifth, it means you got a real sporting shot at being there conference title weekend.
Based on football doesn't do wins above replacement as well as baseball does, but they try. And I've seen ranges anywhere from 1.5 to 4 wins per season. By an elite defensive end can give you that or offer
four
you that
wins.
Wow. Yeah, that seems extreme. 1.5. 1.5 actually feels a little bit aggressive, but it does when you start talking about getting home field advantage, or also especially an edge rusher when you do have an edge rusher can help you get home field advantage,
mm-hmm.
and then having that edge rusher operate at home makes him even that much more effective.
Yeah.
So I think that tracks. I think it's one of those things. That, like we talked about yesterday, that cherry on top of if you've already got a good, solid team, and then we were talking about running backs yesterday, that in that environment, a guy like Saquon Barkley can make a big difference. It's probably not the best purchase if you're already down at the bottom. But, yeah, for somebody that's right on the fringe, one great pass rusher that has to be accounted for and that the offenses are going to be focused on predominantly, I think that seems reasonable.
What's wild about that is that they were third in their own division last year, the Packers were. Like that's a move that a team on the cusp of winning a Super Bowl makes. They got to get out of the NFC North. I mean, they got the Lions in there that won 15 games last year. I don't think the Vikings are going to be 14-3 again because they're breaking in a new quarterback, but I don't think they're going to be a bad football team by any means. I think they're going to be okay. And the Bears made a lot of moves. If you're the Packers, you could be arguing, man, we're just doing this just to keep up with what's going on in the division right now. The Lions are, I know they got upset in the playoffs last year, but the Lions are one of the four or five best teams in football. The Vikings are a very good team. The Bears aren't messing around this offseason. And now here comes the Packers. Like, that division is, put it this way, Seth, I am very glad the Texans got that division out of the way last year in crossing over with them. I would not want to cross over with it this year.
Yeah, it remains one of the more entertaining divisions in terms of just old school
rivalries.
Grudge matches and rivalries and everything, and then you add that into the mix.
Yep.
I like it. They'll be facing the Bears twice a year with their fancy lad new offensive coordinator or coach in Ben Johnson, who does not mind talking smack.
About his own team.
All.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, well, about his own team, about other teams within the division, anything else like that. Yeah.
He likes to
talk. If Micah Parsons sacks Caleb Williams seven times in a game, that's going to be fun.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
No, those matchups got juicier. You're absolutely right. On the flip side of that, the Cowboys, who themselves play in a division with a couple really good teams. I mean, look, as much as I'm talking about the NFC North, the two teams that played in the NFC title game last year are in Dallas's division. They were tied for 18th on FanDuel at 47-1 before the trade. They haven't dropped them much. They dropped them. They're 19th now at 55-1, which you start getting into the high 40s and low 50s, you're talking about long shots for winning the Super Bowl.
Well, as Jerry will tell you, this allows them to move forward and compete in 2026. Because he didn't do this trade before the draft or anything. Yeah, this is a bunch of stuff that helps you long distant future from NFL fans' perspective.
Micah Parsons is now the favorite to win Defensive Player of the Year at 4-1. Yeah, 4-1. Aiden Hutchinson, coming off a broken leg, is number 2 at 6-1. T.J. Watt, Myles Garrett, Nick Bosa, and then you get down to Will Anderson Jr. is tied with your guy Jared Verse at 6th on the list.
So the fun thing about this is because Jerry just always loves going back to the 90s to justify anything he does. Mm-hmm. And there's people in Dallas right now saying, well, you know what? Mike is kind of weird. And I don't know. It seems like it might have been good to move on from him long before we heard rumors 2 years ago that, like, I don't know, a lot of people in the building actually wouldn't be that sad to see Micah go. Yeah. Like the little rumblings like that. It's just funny because if you're going to keep pointing back to how things operated in the 90s, Charles Haley, the defensive end for the Cowboys, was one of the all-time whack jobs in the NFL.
Yeah.
Like, just, he was out there on the fringes of everything.
Oh, yeah.
So, I don't know. Any of the, oh, he doesn't quite fit the mold of the guy we want or anything. Micah Parsons isn't anywhere near what Charles Haley was back when you were winning 3 Super Bowls.
Yeah. 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 No, Charles Haley, yeah. The baggage with Micah is a totally different type of baggage than the baggage that came with Charles Haley, for sure.
Yeah, no, I don't think Charles Haley in today's environment, it would probably be tough to operate with him.
I think so, too.
You know, it's a different world.
You're right. A lot of people weighing in on the Micah trade here, and especially through a Texans lens. We brought this up earlier. If Micah's getting $47 million, and I know Will Anderson Jr. isn't right now, or at least on paper, the accolades doesn't have the resume that Micah does, but I think we can all agree Will Anderson Jr. is at least headed in a trajectory that direction. Text message. I mean, we've got to have the highest paid QB and highest paid non-QB. Get ready for the rest of the team to be Miles Bryan and Eli Cox caliber players, SMH. Yeah, the Texans are going to extend C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson Jr. Michael Irvin, we'll play this audio and take a mania a little bit later. Actually, maybe Ben, pull it now. This might not be a bad time to play it. We'll preview it. This might wind up in take a mania later in the show. Michael Irvin was on ESPN last week after having Jerry Jones on his YouTube channel saying, there's no way Micah Parsons is going nowhere. He's not going anywhere. He is going to, do we have it, Ben? We got it? Okay. Here's Michael Irvin on ESPN last week saying Micah Parsons isn't going anywhere.
Our Adam Schefter reporting that the Cowboys are now listening to trade offers for Micah Parsons. What's your reaction to that?
Micah Parsons, hey, look, you can report all you want. There's no way they're allowing Micah Parsons to go anywhere. All of it, all of this is part of the negotiations. And as I talked to Jerry the other day on my podcast, and he was talking about it the other day when he tried to make that offer, he said somebody told him to shove it up his rear and all of that. It blew my mind. It blew my mind that any kind of conversation like that would be going on in a situation like this. Micah Parsons, I want him to take control of this thing and say, I don't care about you two and whatever y'all got going. Get y'all butts in a room and get my money on that paper. That's what you need to be doing. So I'm hoping that's what gets done. But I guarantee Michael Parsons not going anywhere.
Okay.
Jerry's not that crazy. This is all what we call just negotiation stuff.
So I just want to say right now, before we react to that, Will Anderson Jr. is going nowhere. Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans ain't that crazy. Yeah.
You are saying that now. Whatever speculation there's been about Micah Parsons being you know, too distracted with his podcast or anything else that goes on. It's exactly the opposite with Will Anderson.
Yes.
It's just the whole, he's exactly the kind of guy you want.
Yep.
And want him to be a role model for your other younger players on the team.
Yeah.
Nick Caserio is not a half-crazed weirdo the way that Jerry Jones is. And now, let's see, Michael Irvin said, he said Jerry Jones is not, did he say crazy? Jerry Jones is not crazy?
Yeah, I don't remember the exact word.
I think
word,
he said Jerry Jones is not crazy, yeah. So Micah Parsons will be here. So by that logic, it appears to me that Jerry Jones is indeed crazy.
I think
Michael Irvin is saying that he's crazy. For people who are concerned about how this affects the Texans, yes, they're going to have to pay C.J. Stroud. They're going to have to pay Will Anderson. They've been planning for it. Those contracts, once they do get extended, aren't going to kick in for a couple of years.
Correct.
Right now, the Texans have the sixth most cap space in 2027. So, like, they're now, like, so they've already kind of carved out space and they've planned for this. Where you look at some teams, if they had these concerns, most of these teams are teams that have already paid their quarterbacks, but like the 49ers and the Bills have the least cap space in the year 2027.
Yeah, yeah.
They've already paid their quarterbacks, so that's part of why that's as low as it is. The Chiefs are near the bottom and what have you. The Texans will have a whole new set of issues once they pay Will Anderson and C.J. Stroud,
yeah.
But they are out in front of it. It's not going to be, I don't think it's going to be uncomfortable in the moment.
No.
It's that those contracts won't kick in until 2028.
Yeah.
And so it'll be manageable. The real question is a lot of the guys on the fringes,
yeah,
or the guys that you've drafted well and that get contracts, you're going to have to make some tough decisions on, you know, very, like if Jalen Petrie's contract, I don't know if they'd be able to do this Jalen Petrie deal the way they did it this year. 3 years from now,
correct,
or 4 years from now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're not sitting on any really bad deals right now. Like imagine being the Browns and trying to navigate. The Browns somehow found a way to make Myles Garrett the highest paid non-quarterback for a minute with Deshaun, yeah, Watson's dead weight sitting on their cap. So the Texans, to your point, that's a great number, Seth, that they're sixth in cap space in 2 years. But, you know, the Derek Stingley Jr. contract is not a bad contract. He's the best corner in football. Petrie, yeah, I think they got at a very reasonable price for what they give you. Nico Collins' contract has aged incredibly since they signed him a year ago to the extension. He was a top 10 average annual value wide receiver when they gave him that extension. What did you say the other day? 17th now or something like that on the,
yeah,
list?
Yeah, yeah.
Nico, and that deal's just now kicking in. So
right.
they are not operating. You know, Danielle Hunter is a very highly paid guy. He's basically year to year at this point. You didn't sign him to a 4-year, $160 million deal, you know?
The funny thing, man, the 49ers – 2 years ago or last year, we're in go big or go home mode.
Yeah.
You go out to 2027, the 49ers currently have $5 million of cap space in 2027.
Jeez.
Like they're gonna make some moves to get it, but they got to make some painful moves along,
yeah,
the way to clear that.
Yeah, yeah. That's, well, yeah, that's, wow, that's crazy. That is crazy. Okay, text message. Sorry I missed it. What did the Cowboys get for the trade? That's a good reminder. Not everybody knows the terms of the deal. We should be hitting that. So they got two first-round picks and a defensive lineman named Kenny Clark, who's older but fills a need for them, is how Jerry is selling this thing right now. The issue, I think the biggest issue just in terms of the mechanics of this deal, aside from the fact that Jerry just kicks it down the road and butchers the whole thing, is that they didn't do the deal before the draft. They didn't get any, right, draft capital that helps them this year. You've made yourself, for purposes of 2025, you've traded Micah Parsons for Kenny Clark.
For entertainment purposes, you've kicked the can down the road for future likely late round picks.
Yes.
You know, you've helped the Packers. You traded them to a good team. Yeah. And a team that now does more enter the Super Bowl conversation. So realistically, you shouldn't, yes, it can change, obviously, but realistically, you shouldn't expect the first half of the first round for either of those two,
no,
picks.
No. And unless you trade one of those picks for a player that helps you this year,
yeah,
again, it's for 2025, you got rid of Micah Parsons, one of the five best defensive players in football, and you added Kenny Clark, a run-stopping defensive lineman. You know,
you're taking a gap year.
Yes,
you know, it's like you just put for something that could have been done before the draft. Knowing the way Jerry is so horrendous at getting these things done in any way that actually benefits his team, that's exactly what happened.
You've taken a gap year to do meth. You know, some of the kids take a gap year maybe to, you know, go work in politics, or they take a gap year to go study abroad or whatever. Yeah.
It was when another notably incompetent GM, William O'Brien,
right,
ended up waiting until training end of training camp to trade Jadeveon Clowney.
Yeah.
You just ended up, regardless of what the compensation was, it was like, man, how did you not, when Frank Clark had gotten traded for much higher compensation
before the draft.
Like that same offseason, it was just... It's been ham-handed the entire time.
Yep. So Jerry Jones, those are the terms of the deal. Two first-round picks and Kenny Davis. Text message.
Hey, Jerry, you guys were disappointing last year, and you didn't live up to perhaps the paper talent, the talent on paper of your team. What are you going to do about it? Oh, well, we're loading up for 2026. Don't you worry.
Yeah.
Like it just, oh, wait, we underperformed in 2024, but don't worry. 2026 is going to be gangbusters.
Yeah.
As long as we hit on a couple of late first round picks over the course of 2 years. So really, right, it's 2026 and 2027.
Right. So yeah, and I could see. Okay, so if I'm a Texan fan, I go, okay, how is this different than the Laremy Tunsil trade? You know, the Texans didn't.
Tunsil's like, for one, it was like he's an older guy. They traded him before the draft.
They traded him before the draft. That's one. He's older. That's number two. Those are different.
And also, I didn't like Laremy Tunsil again, because everybody's a slave to these stupid PFF scores. Laremy Tunsil is a really good pass protector.
Yep.
He's not nearly as good. He's not even in the same universe as what Micah Parsons is as a football player.
Yep.
So, like, there's another big part of it. Yeah, there is an argument to be made there, but it's not a perfect apples-to-apples comparison.
I agree with you. I just wanted to talk it through, because as we're sitting here talking about how the Cowboys made themselves worse in 2025, because the big piece of the Tunsil trade is the second-round pick they get next year. And so they realized a couple of things. You know, they got a couple picks this year. They got a third, and they got a sixth or whatever. They have a 2 and a 4 coming next year from Washington. So how is that? You know, and you didn't backfill Laremy Tunsil with, on paper, somebody as talented as him. It is different. I just wanted to walk that through, because I'm expecting those texts. Like, hey, guys, the Texans did the same thing. They made themselves worse at a position.
Right. No, objectively looking at that, yes, except that the Texans did it in a more conventional sense and with a timeline where the compensation was good, which I'm fine with this comp. I thought they'd get a little more. I think they could have gotten more before the draft too, or if they had done this on a more normal time. I mean, everything, when people are still planning for the off season and they've got it's tabula rasa or whatever.
Yeah.
They've got a blank slate in front of them. And they can look at Micah Parsons, if you're talking March and April and May, then that's a lot different, and they've got more to spend and everything else, and they probably would have gotten more. But it's not like this is deplorable trade value.
No, it's not horrible. It's not the Hopkins trade from that standpoint. The compensation in the Hopkins trade was bad. You can debate and discuss two first-round picks and make it look better than it might actually be.
And also, again, it's not a one-off. It's what have we said from the very beginning? Jerry is going to kick the can down the road and kick the can down the road and kick the can down the road. And eventually he's going to cave. And he did. Jerry always chickens out. It's like Mulligetta won. He wanted to frame it as him versus Mulligetta. Mulligetta won
TKO,
hands down.
Man. Yeah,
Jerry Jones is unconscious on the canvas right now.
Yep.
Like Mulligetta de-pantsed Jerry Jones and laughed at his wee-wee.
There's a word you used in the last couple minutes there that I think is the difference. The difference between the Texans moving on from a talented player and not necessarily backfilling him with a player as talented, or the word you used was planning. The Tunsil thing felt like this is part of a plan to fix the offensive line, both in the room and on the field. Like that, I feel like D'Amico Ryans and Nick Caserio probably bringing, you know, maybe with Nick Cayley as part of the conversation as well. They had a plan to do it. Now, will it work? We'll see. But at least Jerry, there's nothing planned. This feels completely impulsive and personal with him and David Mulligetta.
Right, right. No, and he's made it that way. It doesn't even seem personal. He's been calling out David Mulligetta, saying he doesn't know his name, saying that the agent shouldn't even be involved. Yeah. Well, as far as since he wanted to make it him versus David Mulligetta, Mulligetta wins 100%. 100%.
Yeah.
Not even any doubt about it. Like, Jerry got idiotically embarrassed by the matchup that he chose to present it as, which is was the agent versus the owner.
Yes.
And, like, he's going to try to frame it somehow differently. But, yeah, you look at the Texans. We were frustrated because we felt like the plan to re-bolster the offensive line wasn't aggressive enough.
Yeah.
What you did, though, is you traded Laremy Tunsil. You got adequate compensation for him. You signed a bridge tackle in Cam Robinson, and then you drafted an offensive tackle.
That's a plan.
To replace him. And now, so far, I'm really excited about Arianti Urisuri.
Right.
Yeah, that's a plan. This is not a plan. This is getting humiliated by David Mulligetta.
Bingo.
You got destroyed by David Mulligetta.
I could not have said it better myself. Okay, just to be clear, because there's a text saying Tunsil had only played 3 years when he got traded. We're talking about the Texans trading away Laremy Tunsil. We're not talking about the trade that brought Tunsil to Houston back in 2019, the trade away to Washington this offseason. All right, shifting gears for a second here as we start to look ahead to the season. Looks like Travis Hunter's okay. He's 100%, Seth. He's ready to go for the upcoming season.
Good. Okay, so the guy who's going to redefine expectations and everything that it means to be a football player and really what it means to be a human being, because he's going to be so durable and so versatile.
Missed two preseason games.
He couldn't participate in the last two preseason games, but don't worry.
Yeah.
Don't worry. He's all set to redefine what it means to be a football player.
I got to see who Jackson, the Texans will get a look at this in week three. I got to see who Jacksonville plays the first couple of weeks of the season. But yeah, he's
taken pretty even reps. I saw somebody from the Jaguars beat had reported on his preseason stats, like how many reps he took in practice and everything. And it was pretty evenly spread out between receiver and defensive back. I expected it to be more heavily favored towards the wide receiver side, but they have managed to, try to spread it as thin as possible in terms of his preparation for any one single role.
Okay. Before they play the Texans in week three, they play Carolina in week one.
Okay.
I don't know that he's going to get really tested there that hard. I mean, although Carolina's got – they got that Tet McMillan. He's a fun receiver. Now, they play Cincinnati in week two.
His work as a defensive back will be tested.
For sure. Yes. I mean, if it ain't Jamar Chase, it's going to be T. Higgins. They have two top-flight wide receivers on that team.
Yeah.
So he's going to be bushed coming into week three.
Look, this is the wrong way to approach life in football, and it certainly isn't the way that DeMeco would go about it. But, you know, sometimes getting your players engaged in a very specific role, put some bulletin board material up and be like, oh, hey, everybody. This is the guy that everybody says is going to turn you guys into you're gonna look like lazy bums.
Yeah.
You guys are just what? Oh, you play one side of the ball?
Yep.
This is the guy who's going to reinvent expectations.
Yeah.
Okay? So what we're going to do, we are going to every single time that Travis Hunter is on the field on defense, we are going to target the hell
attack
out of him. We are going to make life miserable for him. Yes.
Attack.
Yeah.
Yes. I watched a little bit of the Magnificent Gladstones post roster cut press conference yesterday. I hadn't thought to watch it. And then somebody put up a tweet with a quote from the Magnificent Gladstone, and Lopez retweeted it and tagged me on it. He's like, maybe you can translate this, Sean. I don't know if it's one of the Maggie G's best efforts when it comes to word salad, but here was the Magnificent Gladstone. They traded for Tim Patrick,
a receiver
from, I believe, Denver. And the Magnificent Gladstone took us into the mind of the Gladstone as to why they made this very significant trade for a backup wide receiver.
Really excited about the addition of Tim Patrick. He is somebody that from afar, both Liam, myself, the coaching staff, the scouting staff has really appreciated his game. We talk about the idea of being mentally and physically tough, like I just pointed to, and I use the phrase intangibly rich a lot. I think anybody that does their homework on Tim Patrick understands that he's never had an easy path. He's always had to overcome obstacles. And the only thing that he communicated to us after this decision was made that he's ready to earn every op that lies in front. And when he's got that hunger that he can provide, obviously, from a veteran presence to a room who definitely has, up until Diami, a lot of youth, right? A lot of inexperience in comparison. And the idea of building out a basketball team with not only the wide receiver room, but multiple position groups, that can be very helpful, right? Not the same exact genre across the group. That can be something that when you talk with Liam, being able to artfully design plays to tap into those skill sets is something that he gets creative juices from. And so that was something that was really excited about, the addition of Tim, knowing that he brings something that we don't currently have in the space.
He's in the space.
He's like a carnival barker who went to MIT.
Yeah.
It's like
a minute and a half on Tim Patrick. Like, that's impressive, man.
Yeah, to come right in here. Hey. You've never seen anything like this before. This is a bearded woman who can also speak French.
Behold. They traded. They did the trade with Detroit. So he was, the Tim Patrick coming over. I don't know. I guess it's someone the Texans will have to deal with in week three.
He'll be 32 years old. When he talks about his difficult path, he tore his ACL in 2022, and then he tore his Achilles in 2023.
Yeah.
But he did come back in for the Lions last year. He had 33 receptions for 394 yards.
Yeah, man. It's not a statement.
I'm not denying that the guy's an inspirational story and whatnot.
Right.
I didn't need quite so many adverbs in there in describing exactly. You've got to be artfully designed.
Artfully designed plays for Tim Patrick. Well, in the whole Magnificent Gladstone thing, I bet that whole basketball team thing, when he said that, I'm like, did he misspeak and talk about building the football team? And then I kept watching and like, no, he's got this thing where he talks about rooms and building out different body types.
Well, that's a pretty common one, though.
Is it?
The wide receiver. Yeah, that's super common.
With wide receiving cores,
building a basketball team.
Is it? Okay. All right.
I've used this on you at least 27 times. Yeah. The different body types where you've got a tall guy, you've got more of a smaller guy. You just want to have different body types and different skill sets.
I got you. Well, you're no better than Gladstone then, Seth. All right. the Magnificent Gladstone is a piece of work. That wasn't even one of his better efforts. We've got the sticky notes at the bottom of the rundown that you've been keeping track of all the different phrases that he uses. He didn't, other than intangibly rich, which I almost feel like he uses just as he understands how much he uses that one. He didn't use any of the big ones, though, that you've got here, like modes of operation and singular touch points and sourced intel.
Sourced intel is a big one. I think what did he say about artfully designing plays? That was,
he said,
I'm going to put artfully and just see if he uses it
artfully
more frequently than just that one time.
Where are you on the petty scale of wanting to destroy the Jacksonville Jaguars and Travis Hunter this year?
Sean, I consider myself more of a fighter than a fencer in that regard. And that's another one in the Gladstone glossary.
You are Gladstone.
So he wants his players to be fighters more than fencers.
Yeah.
And that's how I am when it comes to destroying James Gladstone. I don't want to just like score a bunch of touches on his little foil face mask there or whatever. I want to take a heavy sword and lop off every single one of his limbs and just destroy the entire, destroy everything that he's trying to present to us as if he is the guy who's going to reinvent not just the game of football, but life itself.
Yes. I'm with you on that. Are you more?
I want to be intangibly rich with body parts of various, James
Jaguar.
Gladstone front office members. Yes.
Okay, there you go. Are you more excited in week three, assuming that Travis Hunter is still on the field playing both sides? Are you more excited to watch him get smothered by Derek Stingley Jr.? Or to watch Nico Collins plow over him in a run after catch?
Oh, much more Nico Collins.
Yeah.
I want Nico Collins to smush him a couple times.
Okay.
And I like Travis Hunter, but it's not his fault. And yet he is being pointed to by James Gladstone as this guy who's already accomplished things in the NFL.
Yep.
That's what annoys me the most. It's that James Gladstone, contrary to how most football people operate, which is, we'll see, especially personnel people. Personnel people who have been in the business for a while know not to get too high on their horses because they're wrong all the time. Kasari would be the first one to tell you. He could give you a list of all the different guys that he's screwed up on or whiffed on because that's the way it goes. So when a personnel guy is acting like It's a what's the word? Fait accompli.
Yes.
You know, like it's already happened. That oh wow, he talks about Travis Hunter like he's already been a two-way player for 7 years in the NFL.
Yes.
Yes. And I'm sorry, Travis Hunter.
Right.
You seem like a very respectable young man, but now you need to fail because of James Gladstone. You can blame him.
Yes. It's not personal. It's just business.
Yeah.
Travis Hunter. All right. You're collateral.
That's kinda like,
you are collateral damage in the magnificent Gladstone's world of hyperbole. That's
it. I've done this before, Sean.
Yeah.
You know how many guys I've killed from various different mafia families that I liked them. I'd played cards with them.
Yeah.
You know, I'd gone to Miami Beach with them a couple times. Mm-hmm. But when push comes to shove, the family comes first.
Always.
Okay.
Always. Yep.
So yeah, my boss tells me to kill you and to throw you over the side of a fishing boat, I'm going to do it.
Got
to
do it,
that's
man.
That's what I have to do.
Got
to
do it.
That's what I have to do now with Travis Hunter.
Gladstone will be back selling solar this time next year. That's a text. Okay, so Gladstone, we're petty about. Inside the division, who's next on the Seth Payne mini petty list? Either Colts or Titans. Like who's
Daniel Jones?
Yeah.
Again, another guy who seems like a swell enough dude.
Yeah.
But I at some point this year I want to see Daniel Jones' dumb face staring out of one of his ear holes.
Oh, you'll get that. You'll get that early. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think so.
And then I need Anthony mostly to shut people up who haven't watched Anthony Richardson play football that much.
Yeah.
I would like Daniel Jones to get benched after week one. So they can continue to see people acting like the Colts haven't given Anthony Richardson a chance.
Right.
Or just that's the clearest indicator. When I see people say like, well, you drafted him and then you haven't given him a chance. What the hell are you talking about? He was starting in week one.
Yeah.
What do you want? What do you want out of the Colts? I'm in the point where I'm defending the Colts.
Yes.
But because people are so stupid about having takes without having actually watched Anthony Richardson operate. And I say that as somebody who routinely says, on any given Sunday, Anthony Richardson terrifies me.
Yes.
Because, on any given Sunday, he can make one of those throws that shows up on the highlight reel. What they never show on the highlight reels on ESPN are his 17 wild misfires in that same game. So I need Anthony Richardson to have a chance to fail yet again so people can have more stupid takes about Anthony Richardson.
I'm kind of bummed the Texans don't play the Colts till week 13 this year. It's a really weird schedule in that the Texans finish up with the Jags and the Titans before they play the Colts one time this year. It's a strange quirk in the schedule. My other one in the division, Seth, with Tennessee, since I can't be petty about Will Levis because I think he's done for the year, right? It's Cam Ward's show now, and Will Levis, I think, had shoulder surgery. That would have been an easy one, and that's been fun the last couple of years to be petty about, you know, wanting Will Levis to get his ass kicked.
Yeah.
Calvin Ridley. This is why I'm petty about Calvin Ridley. One, despite him being one of my people, degenerate gamblers, the thing I don't like about Calvin Ridley is he complained last year during the season about the Titans offense and he's not getting targeted and he was outwardly complaining. I'm like, dude, they didn't draft you. You chose to sign with the Titans. Like anytime, like it's like Trey Hendrickson complaining about the Bengals being cheap. Like you knew you, I have no sympathy for anybody who signs, especially a big deal in free agency, and then gets to the team and then openly complains about this janky-ass team that I'm on. They sucked when you signed there, dude. They were a bad offense. Will Levis was the quarterback the year before you signed there. You knew what you were getting into. I don't like that, so I'm petty. So I hope Calvin Ridley gets drilled over the middle in week four.
The one thing this is an easy one and it's low-hanging fruit, but it's time. It's time for the Chiefs to get their comeuppance.
Yes.
It's time for them to just deliver on what they've been hinting at the last couple of years, is where they could end up being like a legitimately mediocre offense.
Yeah.
That's what I need to happen. I need for the defense just can't bail them out anymore, and that the Chiefs get to the point where you've got Pat Mahomes openly criticizing Andy Reid or vice versa.
Oh, that would be
great. Just want there to be misery on the offensive side of the ball. And then insurrection almost from the defensive players towards the offensive players.
Yes.
Like, hey, we can't score, You know, you can't expect us to score more than once or twice a game.
Right.
What are we going to do here?
Right. Oh, that would be great. Called all the wrong plays. Called all the wrong plays, and he took my chicken nuggets. He did both of those things to me.
Yeah.
Right? All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, speaking of the Chiefs, Travis Kelce did something very old school this week. Is this the way it is still? Guys, you tell me out on these streets. Is it still done the way Travis Kelce did it earlier this week? I will tell you what that is coming up next. You know, I'm starting to come around on Travis Kelce. Old school sensibilities. Looking at an article from People Magazine. Travis Kelce kept things traditional when it came to his proposal to fiance Taylor Swift. In an interview with Australian radio's Jimmy and Nath show with Emma. That's a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're just Payne and Pendergast. We're not Payne and Pendergast with Ben.
Right.
Although Ben will lobby for that probably. On this show, Travis Kelce's dad, Ed Kelce, revealed that his son asked Taylor's dad, Scott Swift, for his blessing to marry his daughter a month ago. Travis Kelce, old school. Is that still the norm, right, out there?
I think probably. I think it's one of those things where I don't know if it's expected or standard, but it's I remember going through it where I was like, I guess it'd be feel weird if I didn't. The downside of it is,
yeah, I did.
And I knew it wasn't. I mean, I wasn't nervous about what the answer was going to be or anything.
Right.
I'm Seth Payne, and
hell yeah.
I don't know. It's
Seth
one of those things.
Freaking Payne. Yeah.
The downside of not doing it is greater than the I think most people probably still do it.
I think so. I think what you were about to say there, I think is what this texter is saying. You always ask your future bride's father for her hand in marriage. If not, he will always hold it against you. That's old school. So the downside of having it held against you is not worth it.
I was talking to my current bride.
As opposed to your future bride, right?
That was the other thing. That's another big social media thing that guys were doing, that talking about, like, intentionally saying in front of their wives, being like, "Yeah, this is my current wife. This is my current wife, Susan." And then you see the wife look at him like, "What the hell did you just say?"
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's good.
No, the thing that I hate most about Travis Kelce is that it's become politicized somehow as to whether you like or dislike Travis Kelce is somehow an indication of how you feel about things politically.
Shocker.
No, Travis Kelce, long before every damn thing had to be political, was routine, before he was ever with Taylor Swift, was routinely in the top five most hated players in the NFL.
Correct.
Year after year after year,
100%.
Consistently.
Yes.
And now it's gotten to the point where you can't just hate... You can't just hate Travis Kelce without somebody thinking that you're also, you know, betraying exactly how you vote or how you feel about this issue or that issue.
Yes.
It's a bipartisan issue.
Right.
Travis Kelce is an annoying person, okay?
Yes.
Whether Republican, Democrat, whatever. It's just stop making everything political, damn it.
I
just want to dislike my athletes on their own merits.
Yes, yes. Can I just be petty without the politics, please?
Yes.
Please. Someone says you ask for blessings, not permission. Okay, whatever.
Because then you get into the whole dynamic of like, the paternalism of like, she can't make her home disabled and all that. Yeah, people get sensitive about it.
Sean, shouldn't Judy's man Charlie be asking you that question pretty soon? I would guess they're living together. They've been together for several years. They're clearly that's the direction.
Well,
it's
if you didn't put
in.
Your foot down on that,
I'm going to tell you right now. Yeah. I like Charlie so much. He doesn't have to ask me for permission for anything. If they want to elope, that saves me a lot of money. You know.
Oh
if
God,
they,
yeah.
Yeah. So if I get a phone call one day like, "Dad, we went to wherever and now we're married," I'd say, "I love Charlie. This is awesome."
I got to get Judy. Judy's giving me some advice on me running my 7-minute mile. I haven't gotten back to her. This morning I was thinking about, you know, one of my pet theories about why cross-country athletes seem to always have the highest GPA on the amongst athletic programs at colleges.
Yep.
I've always felt like, it probably has something to do with like a sustained effort over time. Like there's a certain personality traits that distance runners have that a lot of like us football players don't have. And as I was sitting there pondering it, I realized like, The show starts in 15 seconds. I better.
Oh, that's why
I better
you were,
get in front of the microphone.
That's why you were running into the set.
As I was thinking about why cross country athletes seem to be better at school than us stupid football players, I almost missed my actual my assignment for the day, which was first and foremost show up to class,
do the show. Yeah. You were doing a stupid thing. Yeah, that's ironic, man. So there are. There are Travis Kelce, Taylor Swift wedding odds out. I poo-pooed weddings the other day, and celebrity weddings in particular. And you explained to me, Sean, the reason you poo-poo them is you're a man, and this tends to be, not to overgeneralize, but it seems more women are interested in the celebrity weddings. Certainly seems that way around the office here. You know,
look, there's a lot. Have you been to a wedding? There's a lot more women crying than men in the audience. Okay,
yeah. But gambling will get me interested in this wedding with the quickness. Tell me of these, which I should take. I don't want to bet on the date. It's like a coin flip, whether it's going to be before July 4th or after July 4th next year. How many outfit changes will Taylor Swift have on her wedding day?
I hate you so much.
What?
Because then I'm thinking about this.
Yeah.
All right. So the number is 2.5.
Under, right? Like, it's not a concert. It's a wedding.
No, on wedding day. But a lot of brides, sometimes they're going to have some kind of after party after the reception. Okay. So that's at least one
change.
That's
one, yeah.
I think when she shows up,
the number's 2.5.
I'm guessing this will be a heavily photographed event, Sean. Okay. When she shows up to either the facility where they're having the wedding or whatever, she's going to be wearing
casuals.
Something different than her wedding dress.
Yep.
So that'll be, if she just changed from that into the wedding dress, that would be one change.
Yep.
And then after the reception, if she changed out of her wedding dress into an after party outfit, that would be two changes. And that would seem normal for a lot of brides.
Yeah.
So given that this is a celebrity wedding, I would take the over.
You would?
I think if it's normal for most women to have two changes on that day, then yeah, I'm
guessing
it's
true. We're not counting whatever she changes into privately after all the festivities are over when they're at the honeymoon suite. Or
when he's like carrying her across the, yeah.
Yeah,
well,
when they're, you know,
who knows though. No, I bet there will be at least,
whatever,
now that'll be at like 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. So
oh, okay, so it's not the same day.
That's included in that.
Yeah. I thought this one, number of current or former NFL players in the wedding party. The number's 1.5.
In the wedding party, though.
Don't you feel
so
like this would be a big
the
wedding?
That's the groomsmen?
Yeah, the groomsmen. Yeah.
So, I mean, he and Pat Mahomes are very good friends.
Well, we know Jason Kelce is probably going to be the best man, I would imagine, right?
Oh, yeah. So he's in the party.
So they're
basically. So that's two, at least.
This is another way of asking, does Travis Kelce have any friends on the team? Is he Bo Callahan?
Well, and he and Mahomes are really good friends, so I'm guessing Mahomes is going to be in the wedding party.
I would think so. I would think maybe Brittany might even be on Taylor's side of things. Haven't
is
they
she a former
to be...
NFL player?
No, but I'm talking...
Oh, okay.
No, I'm just saying, like, the Mahomes family dynamic, yeah.
Yeah,
that feels like an easy over to me, right? Unless everybody hates Travis Kelce on his team the way society hates him.
Yeah, no, but wedding party is different than attending the wedding. So that's like, it's not... The wedding party is just your groomsmen.
It is, but again, if Jason Kelce is already one of them, because that's his brother, to take the under means he has no friends that would even be in the wedding party. If you take the under on 1.5, because you need two.
Well, he can only have friends that are in the NFL. No.
But again, like, I would think that he's been on the Chiefs for a decade. Wouldn't you think he'd make close enough friends with one person to be in the wedding party? Do you think?
I would think so. But also, a lot of times, like, I don't know. I think this is a trickier one than you're making it out to be.
Okay, I'm gonna bet you on this.
Boyhood friends or what have you.
No, I know there'll be other people in the wedding party. I just find it hard to believe that a guy who's been on the same team for 10 years wouldn't have one friend outside from his brother. Who would be in the wedding party? That I find that hard to believe. But maybe
I would take the over on it.
Yeah.
It might just be more just for whatever reason he makes it. Yeah.
You don't think it's a slam dunk like
no.
I do. Who will sing the first song? The Kelce brothers are the two favorites. Okay. I think definitely alcohol would have to be involved if they're singing the first song at the wedding. Somehow Britney Spears found her way onto these odds for singing the first song. Is Britney Spears allowed out these days? Like, it's...
And would you invite her to your wedding? God, no.
Oh,
that's
I would.
A train wreck waiting to happen.
I totally would have invited her to our wedding with me.
If I invite her to my wedding, I'm kind of having. I'd have like a couple of Secret Service men
watching,
who are just watching.
Yeah,
yeah, just waiting for a sign of some. Okay, let's just go ahead and just move her over to the. Let's move her into another room.
That's a good call, Seth. That's a really good call. Did y'all turn into Swifties? No, I'm a gambler and I'm trying to pick out some good bets. Okay, I'm not a Swiftie. Last one. This is a little insulting, but it's funny. How many slices of wedding cake will Andy Reid eat? And they put the number at 4.5. Have you ever seen anybody eat 4 pieces of wedding cake at a wedding?
This is something, though, I think by virtue of making this an odd, immediately I would take the under. Because if Andy Reid is aware of the fact that there are gambling odds on how many pieces of cake he's going to take,
he's going to dial it back.
I think he's either that or he just leans into it. And just go, and he just mows down, you know, makes a joke out of it.
Yes.
So I would take the under. 4.5 isn't that much.
At a wedding, it is. I know I've watched you eat 13 ice cream sandwiches in a press box before.
Yeah.
So I know it's not much for you to sit down and accomplish, but
I'm usually training to run a 7-minute mile.
That's
whereas I don't know if Andy Reid, you know, I need those calories.
The carbs.
Me.
Yeah.
I need the carbs. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a whole bunch of fat.
Yes.
I would still take the under on that one.
I would too. All right. There we go. I'm glad we did this. I got a lot of bets to place on this wedding, whenever the hell it takes place. If it takes place. All right. First weekend of college football. We got some stuff coming up here in the 8 o'clock hour. 8:20 on the show today. We'll be joined by Zach Walchuk, who is on. He's part of the afternoon show on 105.3 The Fan. The Micah up in Dallas. The Micah Parsons trade is a huge topic. We've been talking about it on the show today. College football has already started. Go Cougs! Cougs win last night over SFA. So congrats to the Cougs there. This will be fun. This first weekend. We get debuts of a lot of stuff. The stuff that I am most looking forward to this college football weekend is coming up next.